Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. And as we do every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, gents. How are you guys doing this morning?
Doing great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us on the program. Rex Road's a little laid up, though. Got some knee problems going on, Charles. Old age.
Yeah. What's going on, Joe? This old war injury.
Looks like a torn meniscus, but it's a walking up the stairs maybe injury. Yeah. Good times.
It was probably like a year or two ago. I was outside and I was walking the dogs, and I had a bug land on me, and it freaked me out. And I went to slap it really hard. And I like tore something in my shoulder.
Yeah, keep an eye on you two.
It was awesome.
It's weird because we were such a picture of health at Michigan State.
Yes.
So weird.
Yeah, absolutely. Back in the Halloween candy eating days, that's over for you now, I hear. Supposedly, yeah. Allegedly.
Allegedly. We'll see how it goes for Rex Road on that standpoint. Is it over for Anthony Richardson? How about that for a transition?
Nice.
The Colts. Going with Joe Flacco moving forward, Richardson has started a total of 10 games for Indianapolis. He takes himself out of the game for a play last week, which I've never seen before at the quarterback position. What do you make of the situation right now with Flacco and Richardson in Indianapolis?
Well, if you're a Titans fan and you want to get rid of Levis, let's bring Flacco in. How many bodies does Flacco now have on his resume?
You're stacking up.
Zach Wilson, he went into the Jets, and all the Jets fans thought he looked better than Zach Wilson. Then he went to Cleveland, and he clearly looked better than Deshaun Watson, took them to the playoffs. Now Indianapolis, he's got a shot, honestly, to take them to the playoffs once he steps in for Richardson. I guess the only way I could really say how this is being absorbed, like when I talk to people across the league, I'm like, is this, how do you fix Richardson? Like, what do you guys think of this? Is this over? Pretty much everybody agrees. Like, if they're in the playoff picture, Richardson will stay on the bench. The second they're out of the playoff picture, Richardson goes right back in. So I don't think anybody sees this as like a permanent benching. It's just they're in a situation where they want to win football games. Obviously, Richardson tapping himself out was a terrible mistake. It was an even bigger mistake to admit it when he was asked why he did it. But I think there's a little bit of Bryce Young in this. It's let the kid take a step back, breathe a little bit, reset his mind. And it was funny. I actually had one AFC GM said to me, the problem I have with Richardson is his entire career in the NFL. He was learning, but as soon as he started to suffer injuries, it's like he's been rehabbing injuries. Something has been wrong with him virtually since he started. And he's just like, it takes a lot on you, the mental toll of like rehabbing, constantly dealing with this, then trying to learn, go out there, perform, dealing with social media, which, he said as a GM, that's one of the things that over the last few years they've really come to grapple with, is that now dealing with players, social media is such a huge part of how you deal with players, knowing that you can no longer ask them to turn it off. That's what they used to do, is just say, hey, when the season starts, can you guys just disconnect from that world and it'll be easier for you. It'll be easier for everybody. Just, shut out the noise. He's like, there's no more doing that. It's their lives. It's part of the fabric of who they are. So you have to know how their head is wrapped up and what people are saying, and how much is that affecting them. And, he's like, I'm sure there's a lot of that with Richardson as well. So, I think the problem though is I think Flacco will do well. And I think the Colts have a good enough roster to keep Richardson on the bench. I think they could be playoff eligible, through the rest of the season with Flacco because of who he is and how he operates. You'll see that offense will open up as it did when he's already come off the bench to play for the Colts. And they'll become a more vertical team. They'll be able to run the football and they'll win some games. And that's going to be Richardson's biggest problem. So I think if he ends up sitting on the bench through the rest of the season, the same thing that always happens to Flacco will happen again. He won't be a Colt next year. They'll figure out how they can get Richardson back into the starting lineup and not have someone over his shoulder that could potentially divide the locker room in 2025. He's not done. I'll just put it that way. He's not done. I know Joe's not a fan of this decision. I get it. I understand it. It's sort of the Levis conversation we had earlier this year. It's like winning versus development of a quarterback. And I would argue the grade here is much more steep than Will Levis, because at least Will Levis had played some football. Richardson really has not played a ton of football, and it's the whole Trey Lance conversation. Like, don't take guys who don't play a ton of football. Don't take guys who are constantly hurt, which he was even hurt in high school. He missed portions of his high school career hurt. And that's really what they're juggling right now.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like, I'm the biggest thing I'm not a fan of is the way they talked about it when they drafted him, which absolutely was
right.
How you should be thinking of it, and then not following through and saying, nah, I just start him right away. That's what I'm not a fan of. Like, they didn't, you know, and so I know that this is part of a bigger discussion, Charles, in this league, but I don't know if I want to call it a crisis, but it's certainly a trend and a troubling one, just in terms of everything being accelerated to the point where people are playing earlier and then they're being discarded earlier, and then they go into the, you know, they go into the trash heap, and some of them emerge, and some of them who could have had good careers never do.
Yeah, and it's, I think what people are grappling with is, you know, whether the NFL is a good place to develop a quarterback that needs a ton of development. It's like, if you're going to draft a player who didn't have a ton of, you know, college football under their belt, particularly a quarterback, is the NFL a good place to bring a guy in, throw him to the wolves, and then go, well, we're just going to develop him, and eventually he'll turn into, you know, what we think he can be? And everybody's always, they think they've got the formula. When they make a pick like this, it's always a team that thinks that they know how to do it. We know how to crack the code. And then it's a horrible roller coaster ride. And I still think teams don't consider the other 52 players on the roster and how that's going to affect. It's in some ways, some organizations are very single-minded about it. It's like the GM is like, here's how I feel about it. And the coaches are like, here's how I feel about it. And you have an owner that always weighs in. And no one's sitting there going, okay, well, let's think now about the other 52 players on the roster beyond this quarterback. And how are we going to handle the players that – I'll bring up Cleveland, for example. Going through this Deshaun Watson thing, everyone's focusing it so much through Deshaun Watson. But when you talk to, you know, other people across the league, they're like, why don't you ask Myles Garrett? Like, why don't you ask the players who – are in what's supposed to be sort of the peak of their career, the prime of their career, sitting there feeling like they're wasting time over and over again. Go talk to Joe Thomas about his entire career in Cleveland and how many times he watched the Browns try to develop a quarterback or make a mistake at quarterback and sit there and go, okay, I'm an all-pro again for nothing. like it's just, I'm never going to have the traction where I feel like my career, I reached some of the goals that I wanted to reach. That's I think sometimes that's a conversation that people don't realistically have when it comes to, you know, drafting a Trey Lance, drafting a Zach Wilson and going, is he ready year one? I told you guys in the past on the show that the Jets' big, you know, admission privately after Zach Wilson flamed out there was they never should have put him on the field as a year one player. He should have been locked up in the garage, and, you know, they should have worked on everything they could mechanics wise, making sure he understood the offense, making sure he knew what it, you know, meant every day to be a quarterback when you show up and the things you have to do. It's a conundrum, but it is, the cycle is what it is. And until teams meaningfully stop, you know, doing what they're doing and sit on quarterbacks, I don't think it's really ever going to change. I'll be very curious, and the injury plays into it because you're like, how much work can you really do physically? But I'll be very interested to see what JJ McCarthy looks like next year for the Vikings, you know, because he's at the very least mentally, he's had the ability to sit there and process everything they do and study, you know, that Kevin O'Connell offense, which is the McVay offense, which is the Shanahan offense, but he'll have a whole year to sit there and really stare at it. And maybe not a whole year, but obviously from the draft until next year's camp or off season. So it's just, I'll be interested to see mentally how much more ahead of the curve he is, and having done that without the pressure of playing, you know, and the social media stuff. And if he, you know, he's a failure and he's not producing immediately, I don't know how you resolve it, but I think it's also it's the same question I was asking Marty Morningwig 20 years ago, 24 years ago, when I started covering the NFL, about how do you figure out how to get a good quarterback? Nobody's ever come up with that answer, honestly.
So, Charles, it's reached a disaster level for the Tennessee Titans. They get beat 52-14 by the Lions. They had one of the worst special teams days that I think I've ever seen by a National Football League team. They're 1-6. We'll see what Levis's status looks like for this week. But obviously, I mean, they're one of the worst teams in the NFL. How surprised are you that they're as bad as they have been to this point? And do you think right now they are the worst team in the NFL, or is Carolina worse?
Carolina's worse. I mean, Carolina at this point is willing to trade almost anyone on that team. I mean, there's maybe a half dozen players in Carolina where they're like, we really don't want to have a conversation about this guy, but everybody else we're probably willing to move, realistically, like really actually ready to move on from the vast majority of the roster. I don't think you should feel that way, you know, in Tennessee. There's still quality players on the roster. I'm shocked. This was not at all what I anticipated, but if you had told me, okay, this is what's going to happen at quarterback, and then also this is what's not going to happen with the offensive line, I thought the offensive line would be much further ahead of where it ultimately was when the season started, in terms of being able simply to protect a quarterback. I thought Levis would – I didn't see some of the things that Levis was doing in games, and just the general problems, I didn't see that coming. I thought there was a step forward that we were going to see at the quarterback spot. It didn't happen, and I think that undermined, let's be real, I mean, it really undermined the entire team. I feel like the offensive line, the quarterback play, really threw everything off kilter very quickly. And then obviously, you know, the injuries and Mason Rudolph coming in, and I still think it is such a simple reason. It happens to franchises over and over every year where you see quarterback offensive line fail, especially in September and October, and you will see teams spiral really, really quickly, particularly if they're teams that don't have just like a ton of veteran leadership or the ability to switch gears and maybe do something offensively pretty quickly to make up for the problems that you're having out of the gate. It's just, you know, the Titans didn't have that. I don't think this is a coaching problem. I really don't. I think it is a quarterback resolution problem and a continuing to hammer on the offensive line problem. If you go back and look at the Lions, the things that the Lions resolved, really that franchise's turn, I think, was when they just started saying, you know what, it doesn't matter. We're going to keep investing in the offensive line. We're going to keep working on the offensive line. And as that unit, they started to make some of the right choices and stack the right choices on top of each consecutive year. I felt like that's really when it all started to pay off for Dan Campbell, was when that offensive line really turned a corner. And I think most successful franchises, the model is still build from the lines. Offensive line, defensive line, when you get those right, things will start to get easier in your organization. And it'll be a lot easier to have quarterback success when the players in front of them can have excel in the run game and can block, can pass block for your quarterback. Your quarterbacks will tend to look better.
Well, speaking of the Lions, Charles, I would agree with that. Also, I look at them and I still think I can't see that team doing what it wants to do with zero edge presence and the need to pressure and be creative to try to get after quarterbacks. Do you anticipate, we've talked about Harold Landry here. There's Big Z in Cleveland. It seems like the big guys, Garrett and Crosby, may be untouchable. Do you anticipate a move there? And also anything else? It's been I feel like the trading deadline keeps getting a little better, a little better. And this year we've had a lot of big ones, even, before we get right up against it, are we going to see any other earth-shaking things happening on that front?
The trade deadline, I think people should stop looking at it as a snapshot of like a week or 3 or 4 days. Really, the trade deadline now, I think, starts mid-October. That's when teams start to move pieces. And I think there's been like eight, nine trades since mid-October. So if you look at those as trade deadline moves, it's been a super active trade deadline already. Like if nothing happens through November 5th, there's still almost double-digit trades this year in the NFL, which never used to happen. Most people, especially, you know, I'm 47. Like I remember years where it was just like, you didn't even know.
you didn't even know it existed.
Yeah. You're like, whatever. Like when was that? Yeah. Nobody's moving anything. Oh my God. Someone's going to flip a pick for a player. That's crazy. And then I remember when people started trading players for players. And I was like, this is the most insane thing I've ever seen. Like, how can you trade football players for football players in the middle of the season? But yeah, I mean, it's your question about the Lions. I think Za'Darius Smith obviously is the big. I would be surprised if he doesn't get dealt because he's not going to be back in Cleveland next year. And there's multiple teams that I think are interested in him. I think Baltimore, I think Buffalo, I think Detroit. Surely there are other teams that are not readily obvious that I think would be interested in acquiring him. So the market is there for Cleveland to get something out of him. And I think he's a quality acquisition for any of these teams that are like, hey, it's a mercenary situation, but let's go get the guy and, you know, potentially win a Super Bowl. If it doesn't work out, you know, we'll part company once the offseason arrives and he gets his opportunity to be a free agent. So it's, you know, I think from the standpoint of the Lions making a move, that's probably the number one available guy. I think, you know, look, there's Trey Hendrickson. I'll say this enough. There's enough teams that have brought up Trey Hendrickson with the Bengals to make me think that there might be traction there. That might be the surprise that no one sees happening because the Bengals, that's not their MO. They don't trade guys in situations like this, but he really wants out. He really wants his contract adjusted and they could really get value out of him. The Bengals could. And if they don't deal him now, it's going to go into the off season. He's going to make more noise. There's going to be more issues. And I think they get less. Frankly, I do. I think it's kind of the situation where it was like the Raiders trading Davante Adams a year too late. They should have traded him at the deadline, you know, in 2023 instead of 2024. And I think what they would have gotten out of him at the negotiating table would have been different. But they sat on it a year too long. I think the same thing could ultimately happen with Henderson. But that's a name that pops up. You know, kind of an interesting one that is a little more recent. You know, Travis Etienne, he's hurt. You know, there's a couple of issues with him right now. But I still think his age and what he can do at the running back position. I don't think it's going to happen, but I would not completely put it out of the realm of possibility that a team with a dynamic offense could go, hey, you know what, let's go get this guy because he's a running back that can do a few different things and could give us an offensive spark and maybe a way to scheme a little differently as we move through the remainder of the season. I still think there's a chance Cooper Kupp gets dealt, although it's certainly lessened now that they beat the Vikings and, you know, feel like they've turned the season around. So I think the Lions do make an acquisition. I'd be stunned if they don't. If they don't make an acquisition, that would probably be the one team where I'm like, they'll definitely do something. It feels like Detroit's that team because the offense is cranked. I mean, they're ready. I don't know what else you can do other than, you know, say to Jameson Williams, hey, can you not get suspended slash. You know, can we just stop with all the crap that's going on with you? Like, it's like one thing after another and just keep it together for the balance of this season because we got an opportunity to be a team that could put, you know, 40 on anybody the rest of the way. Defensively, yeah, it puts them in a situation where it makes a ton of sense to go out there and spend some of those assets knowing that you got to take advantage of this window right now when you got it.
Charles, should we be believers in Russell Wilson in the Pittsburgh Steelers? What do you make of the way he's playing?
Man, I'll say this. Like, I was wrong. Like, I did not like the move because I thought, you know, Justin Fields had done enough to keep that job. They were winning football games. Granted, I knew they just were not scoring a lot of points, and I knew there was just that gnawing feeling that they had where they're like, this feels like the offensive production feels too much like 2023 when we felt like we were locked in jail, you know, scoring points. We just were not a team that could even consistently get to the 20-point mark. I think they felt that way still with Fields, where it's like, we're doing some things better, and yes, he has this upside, but we're not accessing the upside as much as we feel like we should be at this point. And Mike never moved off Russ. He just didn't. The entire way, it was always like Mike always felt like he was moving back to Russell Wilson. And I questioned, like, is there just enough there? The second the guy walks in, the offense looked better. And I'm like, wow. Is it George Pickens all of a sudden, you know, goes from just this up, down, you know, oh, my God, is he even going to be on the team after the trade deadline? To all of a sudden you're like, wow, he's realizing all the, you know, the ceiling parts of George Pickens that we really like. But really beyond that, I mean, the running games look better. The offensive line has looked better. There's been times where you see Russ throw, you know, throw passes and you're like, wow, what a clean pocket. I am, because it's just, the proof is there. I mean, what we have seen. So now, does it mean that they go on a run and is he this factor that changes everything for Pittsburgh? I don't know. I mean, to me, if you said Pittsburgh makes the playoffs and they lose and, but Mike Tomlin finishes the season with a winning record, and it's the same thing we've heard over and over. It's the number one hit played on the jukebox every year. Like, yeah, I'd believe that. Like, that would not surprise me if that's ultimately how it goes for Pittsburgh. But I don't know how you can look at them right now and not say that, yeah, Mike Tomlin's right, and my criticism of this change was probably wrong, and we'll see where this goes the rest of the way.
Yeah, and Arthur Smith, as we're seeing, can coordinate some offense too. Speaking of him, Charles, there's been, you know, in this town, you know, this is what happens, right?
Oh, like here we go.
When okay. The preseason.
We're going to do this.
Well, okay. Just a simple question. Yeah, you know, the preseason optimism turns into, God, Vrabel was such an idiot. And now there's a lot of, I'm sorry, Vrabel. But I just want to ask you, where's Mike Vrabel going to be next year?
It's a good question because I'm not sure. To answer that question, you have to answer, like, what is the hiring cycle going to look like? Like, where do you see – I would ask you. I mean, you look at it right now. Where do you see jobs being open? And I
thought Philly for a minute, but maybe not so much anymore.
Right. Now it looks better, right? You know, and because so much of this has to be written. It's the end of October. There are a million things that are going to happen between now and next season, and there's a ton of failure that's going to occur that we don't see, or there's going to be some mediocrity where we're like, well, they probably won't fight. You know, that's we'll move on from their staff, and then you'll have an owner that goes, nope, time to pull the plug. Don't like the way that this looks. Sort of like what happened with the Titans and Vrabel. So, you know, it's. I sit here and I'm like, okay, the Raiders are 2-6. There's no way, right? They pull the plug on Pierce. Come on, man. It's Mark Davis. Absolutely. There's a chance the Raiders could ultimately be open. Like, I don't want to say this, but like Jim Harbaugh and this, the heart arrhythmia thing is concerning with the Chargers. Mm. That's concerning. Like he's talking about having his third heart procedure, you know, now, and people are asking questions about pacemakers, and I think people are just kind of like, oh, whatever, he'll take medication. We'll see, you know, but it's a concerning enough thing that if he's having arrhythmia like during games and it's affecting him, like there, I don't want to report this. I'm not reporting this, but that to me could be the total shock that we don't see coming is that, hey, you know, Jim Harbaugh does have some real health concerns, and is he going to continue coaching? You know, is this going to get resolved to the point where he's definitely going to be the coach there next year? I think people should be, you know, paying more attention to that. That's a real deal that's going on with the Chargers right now. Let me think.
Dallas, New Orleans, Jacksonville.
I mean, Jacksonville, right? Jacksonville is a situation where now they're selling off players. I mean, when you move off of an offensive lineman, granted, who's not going to be there, but you don't just move off of a starting tackle yes, he's not going to be in Jacksonville next year. That still affects your outlook, your depth, and what can happen there moving forward. Where the fact we're talking about Travis Etienne potentially being available, there's a reason why that's happening. How it affects Vrabel's candidacy, I don't know. We have to see how it goes the rest of the season. I have to know who else could potentially be on that list. Everybody's going to talk about Bill Belichick. Everyone's going to talk about Ben Johnson. Bobby Slowick right now has kind of hit a wall in Houston as an OC there. I don't know. You know, you're like, ooh, okay, maybe Bobby Slowick needs another year. You know, Drew Petsing in Arizona was one that was kind of a low-key dark horse guy who could pop up on coaching lists, and it's been up and down there so far offensively. So I'm like, who else is on that list and potentially available, and who's the owner? What's the roster look like? If you're bringing in Vrabel, to me, first and foremost, I think you have to have a defense that he's going to be able to walk in day one, access. You're up and running. Like we're up. And, you know, so if I'm looking at franchises and I'm like, where's the Vrabel fit? Show me the team that has the assets right now to be a top tier, top five, top seven, top eight defense. If they just have the right coaching and scheme in place, that's Mike. If it's hey, you got, you know, a long journey to go offensively and all these, I would, you know, I'm like, really? Okay, you're going to bring in Mike, and how are you going to resolve the other side of the ball? Do you have a quarterback? All these different things. So let's wait and see. It's still early. You know, I don't think anybody can meaningfully answer for sure what's going to happen in some of these places and whether – let me ask you this. We sure Bill Belichick's going to come back? Like, I'm not. I think so, because he's got the ego and he still wants to chase Shula's record. But I do think he's enjoying this.
He's great on TV, man. He's awesome.
Yeah. And the opportunities that he's getting are endless. I mean, he could probably work anywhere he wanted, you know, and he can pick and choose. He's going to have a million things sort of laid at his feet as he continues to operate in the media world. And he's been so good. I think he enjoys the freedom to say whatever he wants, which he does regularly.
Yeah, he does.
And he really likes that. And I'm like, maybe he'll sit there and go, you know what? Maybe I want to go back to, you know, grinding and doing all this stuff. Maybe the Shula record isn't that important to me. I tend to think it is, but I wonder if you could sit down and have a real conversation with him and get him to tell you, is this maybe a little more enjoyable than you thought? Are there maybe other things, alternatives to how you want to finish out your operation in the world of football that you didn't realize existed? And that's part of what we're seeing right now.
Brady and Belichick, media darlings, as we all predicted. Charles?
If I could, I would be like, he's a permanent fixture on the Manning cast. Like,
I agree.
Let's make it to three.
He's great.
For the entire game. We'll do it the rest of the game. We'll have it those three instead of these rotating in of players and
totally,
you know, Hollywood or whatever. I'd be like, okay, he's a fixture there. Where else can we put him? You know, let's fill up his week and put him in different spots and let him operate. I bet you he'd make more money than he's making coaching, man. And he had a bag. He was making the bag. I mean, 20-plus million is the biggest secret contract. No one could ever get the figures right, but he was definitely making over 20 million this season with the Patriots. He's like McAfee level. Like, if he was like, I'm staying here, let me – he could start a podcast tomorrow, and it would be like the Heights podcast, like shopping the Heights podcast around. Like, people would be like, yeah. Six figures easily, you know,
yeah.
30 million plus.
Maybe a dating podcast too.
Ooh, you know?
Dude, and we don't even get into that whole thing. Like, that's a whole other, like, lifestyle for him at this point. You know, do you really want to go back to coaching? I don't know. Whatever. I feel it's not. Joe, why do you even bring that up?
Duck, duck, goose.
Oh, my God.
Oh, boy. Charles, happy Halloween. Thanks for taking time to be with us, and we'll talk to you next week.
I appreciate it. Oh, real quick, are you full candy bar households or are you mini?
I'm mini candy bar households.
Man, miser.
Wait, if I made that Rex Road money, I'd be full candy bar household.
We don't do it either. But I appreciate it.
Are you full candy bar?
We made the switch. Wow. Made the switch. And it's, yeah, we're that house. We're that house where we see the kids like trying to make one more pass before they head in.
Yeah.
I'm like, I know I've seen.
It's like, wow, it's your fourth time here.
Yeah. I'm like, I know I've seen this Dora the Explorer like four times already in the last 45 minutes. So, all right, guys. Have a good night.
Charles Robinson, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock. We'll react to what Charles had to say there coming up next. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.